I want to thank Ben Birch of the White Rose Society for providing this whole thing. Because, you know, the Head On Radio Network is part of the White Rose family. And again, I want to thank everybody who's listening in on the chat rooms and who is listening in their homes and streaming on the computer and all the other stuff. And I hope you like the show, and I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you keep coming back for more, because I enjoy doing this, and I like having the conversation radio. And we'll, of course, be doing the daily reports every day, Monday through Friday. And we'll be back next week for more with the Cup of Joe radio show. And again, I want to thank everybody. This has just been a real great experience, and I'm glad that it's over with for tonight.
You did a great job, Joe.
We're going to go out and get something to eat, and we're going to go to Waffle House. Ooh, and up next is going to be Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network. Thanks a lot, everybody. Good night.
A spoon of show. Do I need to go on? I want a cup of joe. Yeah. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Kincaid. George Bush used his weekly radio address Saturday to attack Democrats under the guise of discussing immigration. Bush claimed that the lack of progress on the so-called immigration debate in the Senate is the fault of Democrats.
This compromise is being blocked by the Senate Democratic leader, who has refused to allow senators to move forward and vote on amendments to this bill. I call on the Senate Minority Leader to end his blocking tactics and allow the Senate to do its work and pass a fair, effective immigration reform bill.
Bush neglected to mention that the amendments in question were tendered by hardline Republicans opposed to his own guest worker policy. The Bush administration is well on the way to war with Iran. Seymour Hersh reports in the April 17th issue of the New Yorker magazine that the White House has laid plans for a huge bombing campaign against Iran. The plans include the use of nuclear bunker buster bombs. The White House campaign includes characterizing Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad as a modern-day Hitler, just like they did with Saddam Hussein. The coal that powers America's energy addiction is soaked in a little more blood. Two more West Virginia coal miners were killed Friday in separate accidents. In one instance, a man was ground to death in the teeth of a continuous mining machine. In the other death, that came when the roof of a section of mine collapsed on the victim. The two deaths bring to 18 the number of workers killed this year, supporting America's boundless lust for cheap electricity. Another U.S. Marine has died from wounds received in action in Iraq's Al Anbar province. The Pentagon said Saturday that the Marine was a member of Regimental Company Combat Team 5 and died Saturday from injuries he sustained on Friday. The only other information forthcoming from the Pentagon was that the individual died, quote, as a result of enemy action. The Defense Department neglected to indicate who the enemy was. The death toll from Friday's mosque bombing in Baghdad has risen to 81. 180 people are now listed as having been wounded in the attack. The attack brought a new tactic into the fray. Two of the bombers were dressed as women in the long black abayas that Shia women have to wear in order to avoid punishment by fundamentalist men. Unrest continued Sunday in Nepal's capital. Nepalese police forces fired into a crowd of protesters. They killed one person and wounded five others. Nepalese people are dissatisfied with the government of their king. He ended the Nepalese experiment in democracy last year. The protests are marking the anniversary of the anti-democratic crackdown. A curfew and shoot-on-sight order remains in effect in the capital, Kathmandu. This is News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know... One small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Lawyers in George Bush's secret military trials in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, say that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has, quote, messed this thing up, unquote. Rumsfeld's rules for the secret trial say that accused prisoners in the concentration camp cannot represent themselves at trial. Military prosecutors say that violates rules of criminal procedure. The Bush administration is considering releasing a convicted terrorist. Luis Posada Carriles was convicted of bombing a jetliner in 1976. He is in the United States illegally and is being detained pending deportation proceedings. His lawyers filed papers Friday asking a federal judge to allow him to go and live with his family in Miami. Rupert Murdoch's right-wing New York Post is under investigation. The paper announced Friday that the FBI is looking into allegations that a columnist for the paper demanded money to keep stories about a billionaire out of print. Jared Paul Stern, a gossip columnist for the conservative paper, is alleged to have demanded $100,000 from billionaire Ron Burkle. The tycoon had been the subject of gossip items about his sex life. Stern was allegedly caught demanding the money from Burkle on videotape. The Bush administration official charged with trying to seduce a little girl has made a full confession. Polk County, Florida Sheriff Grady Judd says Brian Doyle admitted he tried to seduce a person online whom he thought was a 14-year-old girl who was recovering from leukemia. Sheriff Judd also said that he had received an anonymous tip that Bush's Homeland Security Deputy Press Secretary had been disciplined previously for viewing online porn back when he worked for Time Magazine. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's no such thing as a political prisoner. All prisoners are political prisoners. All trials in America are political trials. And when you go into jail, you see that. Because you see that 90% of the people in jail are black. That's what you see. You see that 90% of the people are young.
Alright, everybody, welcome aboard to Fourth Estate Radio. My name is John Fox in Sydney, Australia, and up on the other side of the planet is my best mate, Bruce Kirch. How you going, Bruce?
I'm doing great, John. It's yet another fantastic week for Fourth Estate Radio, man. How you doing down under there, buddy?
Well, I tell you what, man, I think they're going to turn you up to me a little bit here, and man, how good was Joe Vecchio? big round of applause to Joe Vecchio. What a debut on the horn. I wanted to ring in, but I was too busy trying to get it together just to follow him. That was something else.
Well, I think we'll have plenty of time to try to do that at some point down the road. I really was amazed with the guest he had and with some of his analysis. Really was great, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, and what I thought was great is, I don't know if you caught Wayne ringing Bob up and taking issue with some of Joe's statements recently, and I thought that whole thing really developed beautifully, because I actually thought that Wayne was misunderstanding Joe a little bit, because I understand where Joe's coming from on that whole issue, but this is why we're doing this, man. To have these conversations, because more often than not, we find out that we're actually on this. You know, pardon me, I hear that I'm breaking up on your end a little bit, but.
Actually, you're doing fine now, John, but yeah, what a great show, eh? I was thinking of. Yeah, go ahead.
I just love the fact that. You know, again, our fledgling network is growing, because suddenly, like, the stream had life before we went on for the first time. You know, it's just
he warmed it up, man. He's, you know, John, and actually Joe is really has a wonderful outlook on things too. And you know, the one of the last things I listened to the first hour of the show or so, and then. You know, and then I had to sort of tune out to take care of some production stuff before this program. But I listened to the last 5 minutes there, and I caught the last end of that where he was talking about creating the kind of system, a worldwide system, where, you know, we have a real universal living wage rather than a universal living wage in the United States, which isn't universal, of course. You know, and I really like that idea. I really like the idea that the working man around the world deserves better rights and better treatment than the working man is getting around the world. And thank you, Joe, for creating that kind of programming for us.
I think it also goes along with the idea that we've talked about before about the worldwide union. You know, one union, one voice for one people, because it's all about human rights, you know?
Well, you know, of course, the John Birchers and those types would take issue with that, because then we would be creating a one world kind of thing. You know, they hate that. But, you know, but it is what it is. I think we're going to get a heck of a boost with this whole immigration situation that's going on in the United States right now. And I know you guys have dealt with that somewhat down there. John,
mate,
tell me,
this is possibly one week not to bring up immigration.
On what's going on with the whole union busting measures that we're.
Well, I'll tell you, it's been pretty hair raising for a lot of union workers here ever since these new industrial relations reforms went in. I'm sorry, I choked on the word, you know. I just completely choked on it for a second there, because it's not, you know. You have the state, the right to work state. You have a right to work for less. That's what's happened. You know, you said that, you know, everyone's sitting the day that all this stuff took effect. Workers were being fired across the country. Many of them were being asked to rehire as casual employees with no benefits, no nothing. At 20% to 40% less pay, and this has all been signed off by this right-wing government that outright lied. They outright lied to the people, and they used fear tactics of saying, "Oh, Australia will fall behind if we don't stay competitive." Well, the Australian worker has just been sold off to China and India.
Australia will fall behind. Behind who?
Man, the only thing that they seem to be able to fall behind is right in lockstep with Bush and his little bunch of idiots. You know, Howard's as much an American cheerleader as Tony Blair is. You know, I reckon
Howard is what they would have called in the 1940s a collaborator, right?
Absolutely. And the whole Australian wheat board thing is starting to blow up. Now our foreign minister, Alexander Downer, is being called to testify before the investigation. And it's looking like while Howard was standing up there telling lies about WMD and backing up the Republican line, they were funneling $300 million through a Jordanian trucking firm, through the Oil for Food program, directly in Saddam's coffers.
Well, that's just,
so, I mean, I always wondered why they were so lockstep, if it had anything more to do than with the Anzus Treaty. But yeah. What?
Yeah. Well, there was
there was oil plunder to be had, and the Australian thought it was the wheat trade, and we've just dealt with Iraq with the new government. So the wheat trade were.
Well, Joe also mentioned the fact too, just throw him another bone there or another kudo, is that he also mentioned the fact that these right-wing governments always come to power on this idea that they are more moral and more about the rule of law than any other government before them. And then they get in and they end up being what? The most corrupt governments we have seen in recent memory.
Absolutely. I've been amazed. When I first moved here 8 years ago, I really, really thought that the average Australian was extremely cluey, and through a very clever manipulation in a short period of time, I've been able to see xenophobes. And it's been to watch this tiny little country with a population just be able to be made blind to the, and not only that, if they're not blind, they're complicit with the fact that they think it's okay that their prime minister is a liar and they think that that's all fine if that's what it takes to get ahead, and that's sad.
Yeah, it really is. I just wanted to acknowledge to all of you who are listening, we are experiencing a little bit of a technical difficulty, and we're going to be taking a quick break here in a couple of seconds to clean that up and then come back at you. You know, this is the first radio program that we've done, John and myself and Bob, where we have come on the air, right behind someone and hadn't had time to sort of tweak and make the connection work the way it needs to work. So we will, clean that up for you. You're back on again with Fourth Estate Radio. My name is Bruce Birch. That's John Fox over there. If you want to get with us, 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
McGruff, the crime dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
It tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write
Scruff, McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
Friends, drugs and alcohol were the only friends I had. Then a real friend got me into a treatment center. It wasn't easy. Drug and alcohol addiction is a horrible disease. But I got better. I got my friends back, and I got my life back. Treatment taught me what a true friend really is.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
All right, you're back on with 4th Estate Radio. My name is Bruce Birch, and my buddy John Fox is down under. John, you still with us?
Yeah, I think I'm probably a little bit better than before, I hope.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Well, wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. Now I don't feel like I'm off doing, you know, a Twilight Zone episode.
Well, you may very well be, but you're also on 4th Estate Radio at the same time.
Hey, well, you know, if I was in a Twilight Zone episode, I might be able to deal with reality better. Never mind.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, let's talk about reality for a moment. Let's talk about reality. I want to have, you know, throughout this week, John, what I'm going to do is I'm going to dig up as many of those old campaign promises that George Bush talked about when he was out on the campaign trail about a new morality and, you know, cleaning up government. And let's really take a look at how well he's fared for the last 5 years. You want to, you know, I think that's a worthwhile task. What do you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, you'll probably have a long column of things that he didn't do or lied about or just ignored. I reckon it'll be a pretty one-sided results, aside from, you know, tax cuts and war. You know, everything else, you know, as we know, is opposite world. You know, environmental reform was the loosening of the controls and the poisoning of the water systems and the
cutting down of the trees. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, clearing the skies of birds
the clear skies initiative.
Yes.
The clear skies initiative. Let's clear the skies of anything, of any living, breathing thing. We don't want mosquitoes. We don't want anything that might, you know, transmit disease. That's why we're doing this, of course, to keep West Nile from traveling the world. That's what
talk about nose for face syndrome. you know, it's really been a wild week, man. The thing that keeps resonating in my memory from this week was a gentleman in North Carolina that you broke in with your report into Bob's show this week, who stood there and threw veritable poo at the fan, which is Bush.
He did, and he did it in such a nice way, didn't he? I mean, I didn't feel ashamed to listen to this guy. I thought, you know, hey, you know, he was probably too nice. I don't think I would have been that nice. Do you think he would have been that nice, John?
Well, I think it, by being as well tempered as he was, it was the way that he got his statement out, you know. And you have to just be impressed with a man who knew that, you know, probably been thinking about this for weeks, actually gets in, and then all of a sudden it's like, right, this is my 5 minutes, and what am I going to do with that 5 minutes?
Well, you know, I know everyone's heard this 1,000 times, but let's listen to it one more time. You want to, John?
Oh, yes, please.
Bob, if you, well, let's see how quickly he can cue this up. But Harry Taylor is actually a commercial real estate broker in Charlotte, North Carolina, who has only recently become involved in political activities. For people who don't know who he is or what he's all about, he is an unaffiliated voter. He's not registered as a Democrat or as a Republican or as anything else in North Carolina. He is unaffiliated. He is also a member of Move On, a member of Sierra Club. And he says, according to you know, an interview he did with the New York Times directly after this speech by Shrubbo that he attended, he is not you know, he got involved in the World Affairs Council just because of a recent involvement in politics. He's not a lifelong political junkie like many of us. So he's just sort of, you know, he said to be given the opportunity to address the president was like hitting a home run in the World Series. That's exactly what he said about this. which I found to be interesting.
I think I know one reason why he might have been so calm. Maybe because he's just gotten active and just started having a look. He doesn't have that consistent stress and anger level that those of us that have been following this closely for years have. And we need more of these people saying these things, because you and I get started and we can sound like lunatics because we're going, ah, they're nuts.
Do that one more time, John. One more time.
Ah, they're nuts. Why did I just feel like Dave Letterman?
I don't know. So you have to button and unbutton your double-breasted suit if you're going to be Dave Letterman. That's what he does there on TV.
Mate, you've seen pictures of me on the web. I don't have a suit.
You wouldn't if you had a double-breasted suit. Anyway, we're not going to go there, John, because we know you're a thin guy and heavily you move around too quick. But I believe Bob has that clip ready. Bob, go ahead and, if you can, run the Harry Taylor meets George Bush clip.
I don't have a question. What I want to say to you is that I, in my lifetime, I have never felt more ashamed of nor more frightened by my leadership in Washington, including the presidency, by the Senate and
now, let her
the
say.
House.
Let her speak.
Yeah. And I feel like, despite your rhetoric, that compassion and common sense have been left far behind during your administration. And I would hope from time to time that you have the humility and the grace to be ashamed of yourself, inside yourself. And I also want to say that I really appreciate the courtesy of allowing me to speak what I'm saying to you right now. That is part of what this country's about.
It is, yeah.
And I know that this doesn't come welcome to most of the people in this room, but I do appreciate that.
Appreciate
I don't have a question, but I just want to make that comment to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And the interesting thing is that there are a couple of websites out there already that have popped up to address homespun hero Harry. One of them is thankyouharrytaylor.blogspot.com. There's another one called thankyouharrytaylor.org. And, you know, I'm sure that there's probably going to be one on the right wing, like, you know, screw you, Harry Taylor, or something like that. But, you know, we haven't seen that yet.
Well, and you also posted, day before yesterday, that amazing side by side of Mr. Taylor and, that freedom of speech painting. And the resemblance being so remarkable, and if you haven't seen this yet, you have to go to headonradionetwork.com, where we're chatting and blogging and
oh, that's right, we're doing all that stuff
by the way.
Yeah. Maybe we should tell people.
We
about
never did that.
Go ahead.
Well, as usual, the show is being streamed and archived at the White Rose Society. And Ben Birch, I do believe, got kicked over his quota the other day.
John, you're breaking up a bit. I may want to take care of this for the moment. Anyway, we are streaming and being archived, White Rose Society. Ben broke the 10,000 mark. He's at $10,000 and $8.17 or something like that. And so thank you, Ben Birch, for all you're doing, and thank you, everybody, for throwing him a bone. We are chatting in the Head On Radio Network chat room. If you go to headonradionetwork.com, you click on the live chat up in the upper middle part of the page. You'll do a little quick registration that'll shoot you right to the chat room where the, I don't want to call them the most erudite. What I will call them is the most amazing people on the internet are there. Most of them, anyway. And, 98%. There's one guy in there I don't trust, and his name is Bruce Birch. We're also, fourthestateradio.com is our homepage. But, go to Head On Radio Network. There's that picture there. And the picture is a composite. The picture, actually not composite, it's a comparison of Harry Taylor standing there with a microphone, and the one directly underneath it is one of Norman Rockwell's painting that is called Freedom of Speech. And I kind of found this Thursday night after because I actually went to Charlotte. I live in North Carolina live in Greensboro, which is about 90 miles north of Charlotte. And so I ended up going to that event, but we'll discuss this event in greater detail, I think, after the break, John, if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely, and we're going to talk about the noise leading up to continual war for continual peace and Iran and some other things. But you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network. I'm John Fox. That's Bruce Birch, and we'll be right back.
In the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chuck.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war.
Bottom line. Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion makes sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Pablo Escobar, trained at the School of the Americas. Another day making hay up in Hollywood. Execution of the main informant. Fighting FBI and law enforcement. Another day in the Colombian
export trade. Let's talking about who I think is going to, this Mr. Taylor, who just for some reason to me, I think history is going to look at that moment as a turning point.
I think history is going to look at that moment as, I don't want to say so much as a turning point, John, although I do agree it is definitely a turning point of sorts. I think history is going to look at it and say, you know what? This guy stood up and said what the average American citizen probably believes. And, you know,
in reality, he didn't, you know, what he said was not outlandish. I mean, it was not something where, you know, he got up and was frothing at the mouth. This is a guy who looked exactly like your average Joe or average Harry. And, you know, and I think, you know, now this got reported all over the world, by the way. It was not just limited to the U.S. And actually, because of the similarity to that painting, you know, made its way through the blogosphere probably a lot quicker than it would have, and a lot faster, and with, you know, more amazement.
Absolutely.
You know, thank gosh for that. And actually, I wasn't the only one. I'm going to go ahead and say this now. I wasn't the only one to actually make that identification. I posted that to Daily Kos and was immediately informed that someone else had made that comparison before me.
Right.
About, you know, say about, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours before I did. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was, you know, I mean, this was an obvious thing that people went, oh, wow, that looks just like a painting. This guy looks like he stepped right out of a picture. You know,
well, I think it just, I've listened to the clip a few times, and I think Crooks and Liars actually had a bit of the video, and at least for one fleeting moment, the bubble in which this resident president has lived and been able to isolate himself from actually hearing the voice of the people ever, it was cracked, even for just a moment in time. And Bush didn't know what to do with it, you know. His only response was, "I guess they're not your favorite guy," and he had that stupid, seething little smirk of his.
Yes.
You know, like my daddy's got a bigger bank account than your daddy. You know.
a bigger what? Oh, bank account. Oh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of pissing contests, we're going to talk about Iran later. But
I do want to get to that. But I did want to also, John, let's go ahead. You want to run that? You think we should run that special report I did the other day so people can sort of get a feel for what it was like out there that day?
Absolutely, Bob. If you have that ready to go, go for that.
Let's see. I want to make sure he has it ready, but.
He's good, man, but he doesn't have ESP.
No, he doesn't. The special report, we did a special report for, I went to Charlotte, and actually, I'll just go ahead and tell the story, and then we can run that clip. But when I went to Charlotte the other day, the president was going to be in town, and so I decided that, it's very rare the president comes to town, and it's about once a quarter. And he actually, this is the second time he's been to North Carolina in the last 3 months, I think. I wonder why that is.
That's a good question. Do you have any ideas why that might be?
I think part of it is because the president in this state right now has about a 45% approval rating in a red state.
That's doing above the national average, you know. Cup of Joe's pseudo co-host, her name is Phyllis, I believe, made mention about people, you know, thinking that this guy, you know, might have been a plant or this or that or the other thing. Sorry, someone's just popped up a chat window on me. Sorry, Bruce, go. I got to fix something. Hold on.
No problem. Okay. Well, That was mentioned. I mean, I read a number of things about the fact that this Harry Taylor fellow may have been a plant or whatever, and just the facts don't support it, but that's okay. Went down there, had a great time, talked to a bunch of people, and had several people who came up to me and said this is the first time they had ever been out to any kind of political event. You know, I talked to and actually interviewed a lady who was in her 60s who was holding a banner with a lady who was in her 80s. You know, and
so like real America was there.
Yes, real America was there. Everyone from students to an 80-year-old lady who is standing there with a big button on her shirt that said "Worse than Nixon" on her shirt. So you know, I mean, these are folks. And I asked her about that, and I said, you know, is this president as bad as Richard Nixon. She goes, oh, far worse, far worse. She goes, when I was in my 40s, or I guess it was 30s, I guess, you know, she said Richard Nixon didn't seem that scary at the time, to her anyway. But anyway, Bob, if you want to go ahead and roll that special report, we'd appreciate it. This is a Head-On Radio Network special report. I'm Bruce Birch. George Bush visited Charlotte, North Carolina today in an effort to bolster his sagging poll numbers related to his war. As he arrived in the Queen City, hundreds of protesters assembled to express their outrage at Bush and his criminal regime. Protesters came from hundreds of miles around and assembled across the street from the theater at Piedmont Community College, where Bush addressed the nonpartisan but mostly right-wing World Affairs Council. There were some tense moments between police officers and protesters who felt that they were being treated as the criminals when the real criminal, they felt, was inside the theater giving the speech. One elderly lady had her own words to share about Bush.
The biggest thing is every night I watch PBS and the news and see all those young men being killed, you know, and it just tears my heart apart, and I feel so sorry for those mothers, I mean, and try to put myself in their place, and it's just horrible, and I don't understand why we're over there to start with, and I think he should bring the boys home, and, I feel like, you know, he's not going to give in, and probably the next president is going to have to clean up his mess.
And as the crowd outside the theater expressed their outrage, a lone member of the audience expressed his as well. Harry Taylor let the president know exactly how he felt.
I don't have a question. What I want to say to you is that I, in my lifetime, I have never felt more ashamed of nor more frightened by my leadership in Washington, including the presidency, by the Senate and
not
the House.
Nice. Let her speak.
Yeah. And I feel like, despite your rhetoric, that compassion and common sense have been left far behind during your administration. And I would hope from time to time that you have the humility and the grace to be ashamed of yourself, inside yourself. And I also want to say that I really appreciate the courtesy of allowing me to speak what I'm saying to you right now. That is part of what this country's about.
It is, yeah.
And I know that this doesn't come welcome to most of the people in this room, but I do appreciate that. I don't have a question, but I just want to make that comment to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And all this was before the people who were protesting Bush knew that he had been directly implicated in the leak of the name of a CIA operative. This has been a Head-On Radio Network special report. My name is Bruce Birch.
what a great bit of reporting there, Bruce.
Thank you.
And someone tried to ring into me on my computer there, and it threw me completely off. But anyway, what I was trying to get to before is, you know, people wondered about this guy being a plant, and I, you know, went along the train of thought for a minute, and then Gail said to me, she says, "Well, maybe it's getting to the point now that they can't get enough screened lockstep people to fill a venue for Bush anymore." And that maybe we're going to see more of this pop up soon.
Well, smaller
venues.
Well, this was not. There were about, what did they say? There were about 400 people there. I don't know. I can't remember exactly the number, but I don't know that that's true. I think even though they're, you know, his poll numbers are down around this 36th percentile, I still think that he has a huge following in a lot of areas, and Charlotte is, you know, a very conservative city. I mean, we have in North Carolina, I would say that Greensboro, Asheville, Chapel Hill are probably in Durham are probably the most liberal areas in this state. Okay, Charlotte is not. Raleigh is not. They tend to be much more conservative areas, and especially Charlotte, because Charlotte is also very religious. They have, I mean, there's a couple, I mean, you know, they have a boulevard there named after Billy Graham. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So,
oh, no.
Oh, yeah, Billy Graham Boulevard. It's actually one of the major thoroughfares there in the city. So, you know, and that's fine. I mean, you know, there's nothing, Billy Graham's actually a Democrat, but, you know, point being is that, you know, it is a very conservative area, and, you know, I don't think they'd have a problem filling a venue. They don't, now, he won't come to Greensboro. Bush won't come to Green. He's never been to Greensboro that I'm aware of.
Right.
And he won't. He went to Winston-Salem. He's been to High Point, which is a very conservative, smaller city, in between Winston-Salem and Greensboro. He's been to Kernersville, in North Carolina. But he's not ever been to Greensboro. Not been to Chapel Hill. Not going to Asheville.
not going to go to any of the places that aren't obviously full on behind him, which I don't think they can even find really anywhere now. Because it's really getting to, I mean, I'm sorry, Bush is pathetic. You know, you hear the guy speak and he's implicated himself as committing treason more than once. You know, and he still continues to play this dumb-assed hillbilly, you know, and thinking that he can continue to get away with it. And I really think that people are going to begin to get wise. And this Taylor gentleman, obviously, is probably even more right-leaning or, you know, than left-leaning. Sounds like he might be an actual, like, real conservative. And these are the people that are seeing their government being hijacked. And I think the way his wording was just beautiful, you know. It's kind of like the, you know, Mr. President, have you no shame?
Well, and that's the other part, too, is that, you know, see, he was asked, Harry Taylor was asked about that, about his words, and apparently his response was, I've had 6 years to think of what I might want to say. And I don't know. I've had a long time to think of it, too, but, you know, I don't know that I would, I don't know what I would, in the moment, I would say something, I'm sure, but I don't, it might get me arrested, but hey. You know.
Well, see, that's what I mean, you know, why I think maybe we're going to start seeing some more of this kind of speaking out by people who are more recently kind of coming to the realization that something is severely wrong. Because I think sometimes those of us that have been following this for a long time are so quick to get, you know, fiery and crazy, you know, which, I mean, I like getting fiery and crazy. I mean, it's part of the reason why we do this radio show. But when going one-on-one with the president, I don't know if I'd be the best one to be out there, because I'd be calling him a GD war criminal. And I probably wouldn't last very long.
No, you probably wouldn't. You know, I mean, you know, because the reality is that Harry Taylor is probably now, you know, going to be his taxes will be audited this year. He will probably, I mean, you know, who knows? He's on a list. He's probably on a no-fly list already.
Well, yeah. Do you reckon there will be somebody coming out and saying that he's a pedophile? That's usually number one or number two on the right-wing attack.
It may happen.
List, you know, I mean, it happened to everybody. It happened to Scott Ritter, you know, registered Republican. You know, they have problems with Republicans that speak truth. Which, there's a lot of room for we need those people to speak up. You know, just like you know, Colin Powell's, you know, former chief of staff saying, "I want my party back."
Yeah, most absolutely.
I'd be a really, really angry, you know, Republican, you know, if you were to time warp me back 20 years to before I realized that Reagan and the Nixonites and all that was a big scam, if I were still of the regular blind right wing, I would be really, really upset, you know. I'd be completely upset looking at the Treasury, you know, just being absolutely gutted, you know. It's just insane.
Yes, it is. I, you know, we're going to talk about some of that later.
All right, man. Well, it sounds like we got to take a little bit of a break here. So it's looking like 47 minutes past the hour or something like that. And you're going to pick up the box.
Right. Yes, this is Bruce Birch. This is John Fox. This is 4th Estate Radio. We'll be right back.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and when we do, it can be very hard for us to talk about it and get support because nobody expects a man to have breast cancer. But I know one place to get reliable, timely information about breast cancer. Breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet that translates all those big medical words your doctor uses into plain English. It helps you understand what kind of cancer you have and what treatments are out there. It helps you get your head together and make a list of questions for your next doctor's visit. And it gives you all kinds of other good information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Alright, you're back with Bruce Birch and John Fox. This is 4th Estate Radio. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can do that by dialing 1-877-443-2366. Or, if you like the letters on the phone, 1-877, the number 4, head on. Yeah, we are in the slap dab in the middle of our Occupation Watch segment. And, John, I wanted to give you a quick rundown of what the numbers are, the human cost of the occupation in Iraq, and as of today, since the occupation of Iraq on March the 19th, 2003, 2,350 soldiers have died there, and since the mission accomplished speech that he gave aboard the ship there out off of the coast of San Diego, 2,213 have died. So that's essentially 97-something percent have died since. Mission accomplished. And, of course, on the Iraqi side, I've heard varying things. I've heard 100,000. I've heard 130,000. The latest number that I was quoted the other day was 250,000, someone said to me, have died.
Oh, my word. You're kidding.
No, I'm not. I'm not. So that's a quite possible thing. And you know what? That leads us right into the story that I have for this particular segment tonight. And this is going to be in the Washington Post, or actually, I'm sorry, it was in the Washington Post today, front page. And that is that the threat of Shiite militias is now being seen as Iraq's most critical challenge. It looks as if Muslim militias are posing the greatest threat to security. And, you know, I mean, there have been bombings of Shiite members against Sunni Arabs in Baghdad all over the place. They've been having car bombings. They've bombed mosques. I mean, it is literally, if we are not on the brink of a civil war, we are in smack dab in the middle of it and just can't see it yet for some reason.
Well, they don't. They just refuse to see it because civil war equates failure as far as this whole mistake of foreign policy. So they'll never go there, man. They'll never actually say that it's a civil war. It'll be the next administration that'll actually say something like civil war.
Yeah, and as that lady that we just heard in that news piece that I did, you know. She said, you know, someone's going to have to come along and clean up his mess. And when I watched her say that, it was almost like she was talking about her son or something. You know, so I'm like, I'm going to have to come along and clean up the mess behind the boy. But it sure seems that way with this president, is that he doesn't seem to have any interest in creating situations. It's like he goes into a candy store and he breaks the glass case and grabs the prettiest piece of candy out of the thing, and then walks away and leaves the broken case and the glass all over everywhere and ruined products and this for someone else to clean it up. And as he dances out of the store going, oh, look, I saved this piece of candy.
Well put.
You know?
Well put, because, I mean, I really just think that he is just a spoiled little brat run amok, you know? He's just been able to use the power of his family to get away with murder, literally, you know. And I think you're right. The idea of just going in there, smashing the case, and, you know, disregarding the fact that, you know, he's the one that caused the entire problem. But yeah, I saved this one little piece of candy. You know, I think that's a brilliant visual. You know, I almost see him. Like in, you know how Monty Burns is depicted as a kid in The Simpsons, you know?
Yeah.
Little private school brat with the little, you know, private school uniform and all that thing. And having no clue, you know, not care. I think that's it. I think it's absolutely lack of care.
Yeah, it is. And I think what's so scary about these militias is, I mean, it goes even deeper than what we know. You know, 2 years ago, the Iraqi government was largely under American control and led by Alawi. And now the next parliament that's going to be in Iraq will be dominated by the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq. Oh, boy. A religious party that oversees a militia called the Badr Organization. Now, you know, in reality, they have a bunch of individual laws that are supposed to be dissolving all of these individual militias that are all over the place. But the militias are claiming to justify their existence by claiming a need to protect their communities from the violence that pervades the country. Well, what's interesting is that these militiamen, you know, who are supposedly needing to protect their communities are turning around and, you know, well, at least the story that I'm reading here is that they are attacking Sunnis and attacking other people. John, did we not also cover a story about two or three months ago, in the Occupation Watch segment that was an accusation that the British and American espionage agents were creating a lot of the violence?
Oh yeah, there was the British troops, and I think that they were Secret Service agents that were arrested by the Iraqis, being held in an Iraqi prison, and British Special Forces went in and knocked a wall down to go get these two guys out, which completely goes against the idea of sovereignty when these guys were found dressed as local Iraqis with a van full of explosives.
And then they were arrested, they were taken to jail, and guess who busts them out of jail? An entire contingent of British soldiers.
Yeah, and they took down an entire wall of an Iraqi police prison.
I wonder if that made it to the CBS Evening News, John. What do you think?
Hell no.
I don't think so.
It didn't. And we're going to get into it in probably the next hour at some point. But I mean, here we go again. You know.
Yeah, here we go again. Actually, I wanted to take this moment, if we can, to try to just sort of do a quick plug. After this program tonight, going to be running a going to be running a lecture as part of our lecture series. John, you wanna talk about that for a second?
Well, okay. Well, we've been running some lectures that we've done down here in Sydney and whatnot. But you found something last night or whatnot. It's a lecture with Seymour Hersh and Scott Ritter. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a lecture by Seymour Hersh and Scott Ritter, and the lecture was actually recorded in October of last year. So this is about 5 months old. But the fact that they were both on the same stage at the same time is kind of interesting. And they're going to be talking about how to end the conflict in Iraq. So do join us for that. We'll be right back. This is Bruce Birch. That's John Fox. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. The news is next on the Head On Radio Network.
Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid. George Bush used his weekly radio address Saturday to attack Democrats under the guise of discussing immigration. Bush claimed that the lack of progress on the so-called immigration debate in the Senate is the fault of Democrats.
This compromise is being blocked by the Senate Democratic leader, who has refused to allow senators to move forward and vote on amendments to this bill. I call on the Senate Minority Leader to end his blocking tactics and allow the Senate to do its work and pass a fair, effective immigration reform bill.
Bush neglected to mention that the amendments in question were tendered by hardline Republicans opposed to his own guest worker policy. The Bush administration is well on the way to war with Iran. Seymour Hersh reports in the April 17th issue of the New Yorker magazine that the White House has laid plans for a huge bombing campaign against Iran. The plans include the use of nuclear bunker buster bombs. The White House campaign includes characterizing Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad as a modern-day Hitler, just like they did with Saddam Hussein. The coal that powers America's energy addiction is soaked in a little more blood. Two more West Virginia coal miners were killed Friday in separate accidents. In one instance, a man was ground to death in the teeth of a continuous mining machine. In the other death, that came when the roof of a section of mine collapsed on the victim. The two deaths bring to 18 the number of workers killed this year, supporting America's boundless lust for cheap electricity. Another U.S. Marine has died from wounds received in action in Iraq's Al Anbar province. The Pentagon said Saturday that the Marine was a member of Regimental Company Combat Team 5 and died Saturday from injuries he sustained on Friday. The only other information forthcoming from the Pentagon was that the individual died, quote, as a result of enemy action. The Defense Department neglected to indicate who the enemy was. The death toll from Friday's mosque bombing in Baghdad has risen to 81. 180 people are now listed as having been wounded in the attack. The attack brought a new tactic into the fray. Two of the bombers were dressed as women in the long black abayas that Shia women have to wear in order to avoid punishment by fundamentalist men. Unrest continued Sunday in Nepal's capital. Nepalese police forces fired into a crowd of protesters. They killed one person and wounded five others. Nepalese people are dissatisfied with the government of their king. He ended the Nepalese experiment in democracy last year. The protests are marking the anniversary of the anti-democratic crackdown. A curfew and shoot-on-sight order remains in effect in the capital, Kathmandu. This is News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he Nureyev? Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Lawyers in George Bush's secret military trials in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, say that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has, quote, messed this thing up, unquote. Rumsfeld's rules for the secret trial say that accused prisoners in the concentration camp cannot represent themselves at trial. Military prosecutors say that violates rules of criminal procedure. The Bush administration is considering releasing a convicted terrorist. Luis Posada Carriles was convicted of bombing a jetliner in 1976. He is in the United States illegally and is being detained pending deportation proceedings. His lawyers filed papers Friday asking a federal judge to allow him to go and live with his family in Miami. Rupert Murdoch's right-wing New York Post is under investigation. The paper announced Friday that the FBI is looking into allegations that a columnist for the paper demanded money to keep stories about a billionaire out of print. Jared Paul Stern, a gossip columnist for the conservative paper, is alleged to have demanded $100,000 from billionaire Ron Burkle. The tycoon had been the subject of gossip items about his sex life. Stern was allegedly caught demanding the money from Burkle on videotape. The Bush administration official charged with trying to seduce a little girl has made a full confession. Polk County, Florida Sheriff Grady Judd says Brian Doyle admitted he tried to seduce a person online whom he thought was a 14-year-old girl who was recovering from leukemia. Sheriff Judd also said that he had received an anonymous tip that Bush's Homeland Security Deputy Press Secretary had been disciplined previously for viewing online porn back when he worked for Time magazine. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sydney, and I'm not sure if my buddy Bruce Birch is back from getting his cup of tea over there in North Carolina or not, but... You are. There he is. There he is. Right on, man. you got your cup of tea.
I've got my spot of tea here, love.
I
have a little bit of cheesecake, too, John. Strawberry French cheesecake. Yes, it's the bomb.
When did your studio get catering?
We got catering. It was about the same time that we decided to get a refrigerator.
Oh, right. I got you.
And, you know, catering here consists of, you know, Domino's or Papa John's. I'm sorry, but it's not, you know, not very highbrow catering.
Right on, man. Well, I tell you, we've been talking about, you know, the beat-up, you know, pissing contest that has been Bush and Iran for the last few months. And, you know, Seymour Hersh wrote a piece just 3 months ago or something that was talking about basically everything that's happening now, you know, increased air campaigns in Iraq and slowly shifting things toward Iran.
Yeah, we covered that. Actually, he went on, I guess it was one of the morning news shows. He went on and he basically laid out how the Bush administration was going to change their strategy. And you know what? What happened 3 months later, John?
It came to pass.
Yeah.
And so I have a feeling that, you know, going by past experience, Seymour Hersh has a piece on the New Yorker, at the NewYorker.com website, that basically I think is laying out the fact that we are, you know, basically headed for, you know, more war. This the 1984 thing that Malloy's doing is great because it's that continual war for continual peace. And it seems that the Bush administration is actually looking at using nukes as a viable first option, and they're drawing up targets. I mean, this is all playing out exactly as Hersh said, so I think everybody needs, and we're going to talk about some of this, because I've read most of this article, and it's quite a lengthy thing, but where is this thing? I got to find this one quote from here. I lost my spot. But basically talking about that you have high-ranking people in the Pentagon that are considering even resigning over the fact that they're talking about really starting World War III with nukes. And I've said it before, man, I thought we grew up from this. You know, I really thought we got away from ever doing this again, getting into a nuke-based war. Or Cold War.
Well, you know, they made a lot of money in the Cold War, John.
Oh yeah, well, we know that, and Reagan didn't bring down, you know, the Soviet Union. It was all, you know, it was an economic war, not a military war, that took it down. You know, we bankrupted the Soviet Union. It wasn't actually policy by just being able to produce more weapons, which made them have to try and keep up, as opposed to feeding their people, and so of course it was going to crash, you know. But there seems as though we have a bunch of civilians making the calls here, and as I still can, why the spot that I had so beautifully marked for so long has run away from me, as you know, can happen.
Absolutely, yes. It's one of those things that just comes along and bang, there it's gone, and then you're there. It's actually kind of interesting, and I really wanted to say this about Seymour Hersh. You know, I think it's time that we try to get this guy on the show, John, but, you know, I really think
I agree.
I don't know why it is, but he has, you know, of course he's been in journalism for a long, long time, but he has connections that are beyond the pale, and he has been painted. They've attacked him too, any number of times. So it's not like he is, the mouthpiece of the administration. But what is really scary to me is that Bush apparently sees this guy Ahmadinejad as the next Adolf Hitler. This is what Bush says.
Right, and he's actually saying that moving into Iran is going to be the hallmark of his legacy. I mean, this Bush is delusional, man. He's absolutely crazy. You know, it's absolutely insane. And in here they're talking about Pentagon officials are saying the attention to the nuclear option has created serious misgivings inside the offices of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Some officers have talked about resigning late this winter. The Joint Chiefs of Staff sought to remove the nuclear option from the evolving war plans for Iran without success, the former intelligence officer stated. The White House said, "Why are you challenging this?" So it seems like the administration is hell-bent, and they're using a think tank that is all a bunch of Rummy's buddies that are pushing that this is like a viable option when you need to get targets quickly that conventional warfare won't be able to handle. It's, to me, that's just absolutely insane.
Well, am I the only one that thinks, I mean, this is just the simplistic, you know, the simplistic view that I have of the world. Am I the only one that thinks that it's strange that the president would use nuclear weapons to go after a country that wants to develop nuclear weapons? I mean, doesn't that prove their point?
Well, yeah, and we've talked about previously on the show that the Iranians at the beginning of the Bush administration actually went to the United States saying, "Let's talk about the things that are worrying you." So, I mean, the whole thing is a setup. And if the American people, you know, fall for this again, you know, but I don't know if they're going to be able to do it this time.
And I don't know either, but I do think that, you know, well, first of all, we need to talk in terms of reality. Now, here's the reality. The president wants to create a war in Iran. He wants to go over there, and, you know, one can't help but think, well, okay, that's the last country in the Middle East that is either not A, on our conquered list, B, you know, not bribed with mangoes, C, you know, in some way, shape, or form, in cahoots with us financially.
And also add into the mix, right, Australia just signed a deal to sell uranium to China, and they're looking to sign on deals to sell uranium to India, mm-hmm. and to Pakistan. So let's just arm each other's enemies. I mean, this really scares the bejesus out of me, man. It was only just a couple of years ago that, you know, the Australians said that, you know, we're only selling to who we sell to and no more. And then suddenly what used to be national policy just seems to have been thrown to the wind.
Yeah, I totally think so. There's a clip that we have of Scott Ritter that I had was able to get today that I was actually, I think it was on Crooks and Liars. Mm-hmm. But this clip is really quite amazing because Scott Ritter, as we know, is one of those people that is very very much in the know about nuclear capability and was one of the people that came out, you know, and basically said that WMD in Iraq was kind of crazy, didn't he, John?
Oh yeah, and what was the first thing that suddenly came out of Fox News? That suddenly Scott Ritter, a lifelong Republican, was now a child molester.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Well, I think Bob has that clip right here. Bob, if you want, go ahead and run that, please.
Well, it's curious. He talks about a best-case scenario for an Iranian nuclear program. But it just jumps through some identified technological hurdles as if they don't exist, such as, can Iran produce a P2 centrifuge that functions? We don't know if Iran can do that yet. Where are they going to get the uranium hexafluoride? They've got 100 kilograms provided by China. That's enough to do low-level testing. But to actually run a cascade that enriches uranium, Iran will have to use its own indigenous supply of uranium ore, which is heavily contaminated with the element molybdenum. Iran can't separate molybdenum from its uranium. So if they run UF6, uranium hexafluoride contaminated with molybdenum, through a centrifuge cascade, it will destroy the cascade. This is known. This is known owned by everybody. So this is absurd in the extreme to talk about Iran suddenly representing a threat. We know Iran doesn't represent a threat. We know that Iran has no technical capability to enrich on the level that they've talked. They're still very much at the beginning stages of this process. And let me remind everybody that nothing Iran's accused of doing is illegal. They're permitted to do all of this under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which again represents the absurdity of this whole process, where we're condemning Iran for doing that which is permitted under a treaty which has been signed and entered into a force and has UN inspectors on the ground verifying Iranian compliance.
This is logical, and this is one of the things administration just won't like. They won't want to. Won't want to hear this from him. It's a beautiful showing that you know, if you look past the rhetoric, you know, what is the real capability? And he makes the comment about the getting uranium from China. Well, uranium's just decided to buy more uranium. China's just decided to get more uranium from Australia. So there you go. There's.
So China can enrich the uranium and then sell it to Iran. Is that what's happening?
Well, it seems like it could be the case.
Huh.
You know,
how about that?
China has, you know, pretty good ties with Iran, and you know, they have oil deals and things like that, and I'm just amazed that we're selling, you know, the fuel to all sides. You know, and we're suddenly looking to go right back into another Cold War. But this time, I think actually it could be the U.S. to strike first. But I believe we still have a caller on the line. Do we still have our caller there? Is it from Indiana?
Yes, I believe that would be Gerard. Gerard, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. It's great to hear from you.
I just wanted to make a few quick points, kind of under the main theme of cleaning up after W.
Please do.
Yeah.
You need a big broom.
Well, basically, starting locally here, just a little bit of news. We had, and I know you were talking earlier, we kind of want to steer away from immigration issue, but we did have a demonstration locally here today in a town nearby in Goshen, Indiana. Now, Goshen, Indiana is not a huge community. I'm going to say between probably 30,000 to 50,000 people. But there were 2,000 Latino people and other people marching with American flags, expressing their views on the whole. I think a lot of their reaction was basically against this kind of draconian bills sponsored by our buddy Sensenbrenner in the House. But I was struck by the fact that there were 2,000 people in a community that small that came out and wondering what would happen what would have happened if we, in communities around the country of that size, if 2,000 people showed up or turned out when Bush was touting his Social Security plan, or just to turn out and say, hey, you know, what is your involvement with the whole Valerie Plame thing? Or, you know, go down the list. And that, coupled with something I saw the other night on Bill Maher's show on HBO, where he interviewed a news anchor, apparently a very popular news anchor, a Latino gentleman who apparently, according to Bill Maher, reaches more Latino people than all of the three major networks in the U.S. combined.
Yeah, he interviewed him in Cancun, right?
Right, right. He's down there covering Bush's visit.
Uh-huh.
And one of the comments that Maher made is that, you know, they have this, the Latino community has people like that news anchor and people on the radio who can reach you know, it was such a surprise that there was such a great turnout of these people, and seemingly spontaneously. And I guess, you know, to try to connect some dots here, you know, looking forward to the 2006 election, it would seem to me that that's the kind of reaction we need in, like I said, all communities all over the United States.
Well, I think you bring up a good point there, mate. And I think one of the things that a lot of the Latin American community still has is a sense of community at all,
mm-hmm.
much more than many other aspects of the American population. And I think that is exactly how they were able to do this almost unbeknownst to every white person all over this planet.
Yeah. And I was thinking also of something Bob Kincaid has brought up on his show about it, when these things started happening, is that, you know, those of us who, you know, call ourselves liberal, progressive, Democrat, whatever label you want to put on yourself, I think we have to reach out not only to the Latino community, but amongst ourselves. I mean, if we have issues with third-party candidates or whatever, we got to start talking amongst ourselves in those constituencies and communities if we're going to be in a position in November of 2006 to start the cleanup after Bush and the neocons.
I totally agree. I think that time has come for us to, you know, for this guy to be held accountable. And to be honest with you, Gerard, to me, it's not so much the as they say, form follows function. To me, it's the ends, I should say, the means of how we do that is not so important as much as we get people into the House of Representatives who can vote on articles of impeachment.
Right. Well,
and if those people are Greens out of Delaware or Democrats out of North Carolina, to me it doesn't make any, you know, I don't care, as long as there are people who are on the left side who know that this president is, you know, is absolutely in the wrong.
Yeah, and, you know, I think when you see people on the street like that, I mean, that's where the rubber hits the road. I mean, even if, you know, on an issue like the flagrant, what do you want to say? The whole Diebold situation. I think there are probably even people, Republicans, who would, you know, switch their vote possibly on that issue alone. I mean, I'm sure there are Republicans out there who would want to have free and fair elections.
Sure, absolutely.
So if we can get to a point where we're all communicating, I mean, just to see that happen in the Latino community was just really telling for me.
I hear you. Well, you know, one thing that's going to be happening this coming Monday is nationwide, again, they've called for another day of solidarity with immigrants. Mm-hmm. And here in North Carolina, there is a small little city south east of where I live called Siler City, where that's coincidentally, if you know anything about the Andy Griffith Show, that's where Aunt B was from. And I'm not lying, actually, and that's, you know, that's where she lived. She was known as the cat lady there. She had a bunch of cats, but that's beside the point. Apparently, there is a huge rally scheduled for Siler City there this coming Monday, and they're expecting anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 people in a town that's only 5,000 to 10,000 people. Okay, and you know, again, you know, when I go to these rallies, oftentimes, you know, I'm there in a dual role. I'm there as an intrepid reporter. And I'm also there as, you know, someone who is trying to outreach to communities and say, you know, I mean, the bottom line is that you and I know that the root of all evil rests with people like James Sensenbrenner and the neocon agenda. But how do we tell the Latinos that? How do we get that message across to them that in order for them to have a better life in the United States, we need to get rid of, you know, these forces that are doing nothing but exploiting their labor and you know, and turning around and driving the working people to fight against each other for what crumbs that the business, the corporate world wants to throw down the ground.
Right. Yeah, and I think we really have to get a message out there. I think the day after Samuel Alito was confirmed, Mike Malloy on his show made a comment, and which I will sticks in my mind, that, you know, this is going to be 20 or 30 years of hard butt-busting work and organizing to counteract this kind of, you know, that kind of a nomination. And, you know, I think that's one place, and, you know, reaching out to these other communities is one place to start. And we just got to do it.
I totally agree. Gerard, thanks so much for calling us in tonight here on Fourth Estate Radio.
Okay, thanks, guys. And I wanted to tell you, too, I listened earlier today to the Humphrey McQueen lecture, and I hope you guys continue with that kind of thing. I think that's it's great to have that kind of a perspective. I would have never known about Humphrey McQueen had I not seen it on your website. So
well,
we appreciate that, too.
Thank you very much, man.
It was a great lecture, and actually stay tuned after this show tonight. We're going to have Seymour Hersh and Scott Ritter talking about how to get out of Iraq, so it should be an interesting one, too. But we are, looks like we're hammering down to the bottom of the hour here. It's about 11:28. This is Bruce Birch. That's John Fox over there. This is Fourth Estate Radio. Please do join us after the break.
I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2-new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductocarcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prime. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
But we're all in this together, yeah, we are all in this together. We're all in this together. We're all in this together. We're all in this together. We are all in this.
Yes, we're all in this together. My name is Bruce Birch. This is Fourth Estate Radio. My good buddy John Fox is down under. Down under what? We're not sure. But he's over there.
My little location, Harbor Bridge. I tell you what, man. Everyone else has been having their fundraisers, and there's been much success had by many, like, you know, Joe's gotten himself on live and whatnot. I think it's time to plug ours, because I need better connection.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. You know, we most of the time we get by, but there are times where, you know, it just feels like a long distance McDonald's drive through, and that just it gets really boring because I lose my spot and I sound like I'm lost, which, well, I get lost. But if you go to fourthestateradio.com, we have a fundraiser going on there. There's PayPal details. And, you know, if you have something extra you can spare to toss in, it would be greatly appreciated because we would like to get ourselves up to, like, a big, fat, you know, U-Butte pipe hooked up here so that we don't have all these little gaps and packet losses as we use the public internet to bring you conversation radio.
Well, and that, not only that, but I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, we've got a connection from here in North Carolina all the way to Australia. And in order to have a connection like that work, we've got to have the right kind of bandwidth, and right now we don't. And so, you know, do try to help us out, man. We're trying to help you out, bringing you entertainment and the latest and greatest of real people's analysis of the news every week. So, you know, I don't want to hit it too hard here, but just do the right thing if you can. We would very, very much appreciate it.
And on this show, we definitely push this bit of the technology to its limits more than any of the other shows because of the mad three-way connection that we end up doing in this situation, which just tends to make it a little bit more complicated from time to time. But, you know, we get by because we want to do this. We enjoy doing this. And so, you know, we deal with the hiccups as they come. And I think we've been getting away pretty well, but I definitely think the time is come for us to step it up, because you know, we're growing every day, man. I'm loving the fact that Joe's on the lineup now doing Saturday nights with us. It's just, I don't know, just really, really blows my mind. You know, we, you, me, Bob, Agnes, Ben, this whole thing has been, you know, it was an idea, and it's suddenly a reality. It's an entity unto its own.
Definitely
it's
is
a really cool thing.
Most definitely is. But I, folks, if you can do the right thing, or you know, if you feel like you're being kind of politically subversive by supporting our program, then we're down with that. We're we'll take that. Okay.
And I always forget to plug even also the fourthestateradio.com website. There's, you know, you can even get Fourth Estate t-shirts and stuff like that. So if you want to get something for your donation, you can do that as well.
Yeah. We could definitely, and we have great stuff there.
Yeah. I got to get me one of those t-shirts, in fact. but, mate, we were talking about the great pissing contest, which is Bush and the Iranians, and how, man, it's not looking good. Oh, whoa, we got another call. Hey, I love live radio. I do believe there, Bob, if you want to pump him through, Wayne is on line one. You want to bring him in?
Am I there?
Wayne, you there?
I'm there.
G'day, Wayne. Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio.
It's a pleasure to talk to you guys.
I just wanted to clear up something earlier when I was talking to Joe. I think the only thing that me and Joe really disagree with is that I think it's possible that the Democrats could take back the House in 2006. And Joe right. doesn't think so. Now, Joe has very good reasons to think that. They've stolen two elections from us, and, there's probably every indication that they could do it again. But I think they're going to be overwhelmed by people voting against them. I think people are turning against, just because you're a Republican, I think that's a good enough reason for people to vote against you.
I think you're right there, Wayne, with that. And what I was trying to say earlier, though, was I was glad that you rang up and spoke to Joe, because it actually showed how almost on the same page the two of you are. But when it comes to how much effect the voting games that are being played will have, how much effect that'll have on 2006 is where you differ. Now, right. what we do about it is another thing, because we're still all wanting the same results. So I don't think that this has to be an issue where we end up dividing our side.
No, and I don't either. We already have enough division. We have to come together, and that's why some people don't understand when you say that I'm going to vote for the Democrat. Now, it's just like Hillary for president. I don't believe Hillary should be president. I don't want her to be president. I won't work for her. But if she's the nominee, then I'd vote for her before I would vote for a Republican.
I had a conversation the other day, Wayne. This is Bruce, by the way. I had a conversation with Wayne, not with Wayne, with someone else the other day. Okay, I'll get it together in a minute. Let me clear my voice.
Too many continents okay. and stuff together.
It's like trying to piece together oatmeal, you know?
Yes.
It's a big glob of stuff there. Anyway, I was having a conversation with someone the other day who is absolutely against voting at all. And, he was saying to me, how can you support people who would be in favor of war? And it was really he had an interesting point. And his take on it was, well, if we had gotten John Kerry into the White House this past time around, that he would have actually probably increased the troop levels in Iraq. What do you think about that, Wayne?
He may very well have done that one day, but then the next day he probably would have changed his mind. he would have voted for that before he voted against it, or whatever he does. John Kerry was a terrible we worked very hard for John Kerry. And I don't know, he just seemed like he gave up and picked up his toys and went home. I guess he had a windsurfing contest or something, I don't know, to go to. But
he was a huge disappointment to those of us that backed him so strongly. And, I think that if he had gotten in, I have a feeling he would have increased the troops, only for the simple fact that I do still think he's a good enough guy that he would have wanted to minimize the damage now that we were going down a bad road, and I think he would have probably upped the troops to get out.
I agree with you. He would have tried to get the job done, because these people, these people were under the illusion that we were just going to walk in there, everything was going to be wonderful, they get all the oil, and it would be over.
I don't know that they believed that so much as they wanted the rest of us to believe it. I think that they understood that having a certain amount of unrest and having a certain amount of, right now they're in the middle of a, bottom line is they're in the middle of a civil war over there.
Yes,
the reality is that, I think George is fine with that. I think he's sitting back and he says, well, if they kill each other off, we don't have to waste our own bullets. Do you remember Ronald Reagan saying something similar like that when he was talking about the housing projects?
When
way
he was talking
the
about the what?
He was talking about housing projects way back in the 80s.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do remember that. I try to forget that, but You're correct.
You drink very heavily to try to forget those kind of things,
yes,
don't you?
You know.
And here comes Bruce to ruin the day. But, you know, it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. I don't think they want to get out of Iraq, and I think, quite honestly, that having a permanent military presence there, you know, the president already said, or Bush, I should say, already said that he was not going to pull troops out before he left office. And
he was going to leave that to someone else.
Yeah, and I think that's just pure, that's very unfortunate. And, you know, in direct opposition to what the military planners want, it's in direct opposition to what the soldiers there want, it's in direct opposition to what the country wants. He's basically, a lone wolf McQuaid there, claiming to want all these things, and nobody's with him. So,
you know, I agree with you, but I think that, you know, what they are underestimating is how much tolerance the people, look at his poll rating, you know, or his numbers. I mean, numbers are dropping for everyone. And, Republicans, and, you know, granted, Congress has a, you know, equally low rating, as they should. Now, you know, Democrats haven't done what they could do, and, you know, everybody's just following. But that goes back to taking back the House. Like I told Joe and we talk about on Bob's show, if we take back the House, then we could truly hold Democrats responsible. There are no more excuses. And if they don't do what, you know, we expect them to do, then we could remove them in 2008. That's one thing good about the House people. They got to run every 2 years.
And that's where the articles of impeachment originate from.
Yes, they are. That's why I say I prefer the House over the... I'd like them both, but if I could only have one, I want the House, because that's where they introduce articles of impeachment.
Well,
subpoena powers and investigations, and you know.
Sure, and I agree with you. I'm not going to say it. I will say that I think that it's absolutely possible that we can take the House back.
Well,
but then I'm the eternal optimist in this. Too.
Well, I am too, but I don't know how else to operate. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I mean, I can't get up in the morning and go, "We'll never win again," and then go out and say, "Okay, now we got to work real hard to what lose." I can't do that. I can't operate on that mindset. I have to think I'm going to win. You know what I mean?
Well, absolutely. But I do think that there is absolutely room for folks like Joe who have a larger picture in mind, and that is that, you know what, we may not, you know, in which what he's saying is that, you know, we may not win this time, but we've got to build for a larger victory, and that is to try to build the kind of coalition that we had in the House and in the Senate for, you know, 40 years prior to Reagan.
I agree. But,
so,
you know, that starts with, you know, I mean, if I lose, or, you know, if what I think doesn't prove to be true in 2006, I'll be just as optimistic about 2008.
Sure. Yeah. And I will, too. So.
Well, and the other thing is Joe is reminding us that there is this issue, because here again is we run into this problem on the left a lot of times. We end up chasing up our own pet issues so much. And I remember you actually said something about the folks in the chat room you were talking about people having their pet issues, I believe it was you, and you couldn't get them to talk outside that. And so as you and I and Bruce move forward trying to do something in 2006, okay, say we do have the mad turnout that comes out and we know for a fact, regardless of what the machines do, that, say, you know, it's two-thirds, you know, turnover, you know, towards the Democrats. And if it ends up being fudged, people like Joe have continued to keep that on the front burner to remind us that if we do go down again by games, we remember why, because we still have to chase the problems of the voting machines and you know, redistricting and all these other games that are played that have made it so easy for the right wing to keep power.
Yeah, that's very true. All of that is very true.
Yeah.
We have to go back to paper ballots. That's the only way to have a clean
public
election
financing,
as far as I'm concerned. Or an election that people can have confidence in.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, you know, people talk about paper trails. you could have all the paper trails you want. They, you know, if they could manipulate the machine that counts the votes, who's going to compare the, you know, paper trails?
Wayne, what about the elections workers in Ohio that were this week that were indicted for altering a test count so that they wouldn't have to go back and count and do a full recount?
These are the things that are giving me hope that because of things like that, people are, you know, hopefully becoming more aware of, you know, how these people have manipulated things.
Sure.
I mean, when you have who was the guy, Blackwell?
Ken Blackwell, yeah.
The Secretary of State. But he was also head of some Republican committee to reelect Bush.
Yeah.
I mean, that shouldn't be. Sorry, you can't do that.
Right.
You could either be that or you could be Secretary of State. Which one do you want?
As was Catherine Harris in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, they're not stupid.
She could go get new boobs. God, did I just say that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you did. It's okay. There's only one woman that listens anyway. No, I'm just playing.
Now, don't get yourself in trouble.
No, there's a number, and that was not intended to. Anyway, oh, my goodness, I guess I'm going to be in trouble now. No, that's not a promo cut, Bob. We're not using this. We're not using that one as a promo cut.
He could just sit back there and push buttons. He's innocent.
I know, he's happy. He's
and as we know, Bruce, I can get us into a lot of trouble via our promos.
Well, that is the truth.
Yeah.
Wayne, it's great talking with you, man.
People upset, but you know what are you going to do? They'll get over it. They're young yet.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we appreciate you calling in. It's the first time you've ever called in to 4th Estate Radio, Wayne. We feel kind of honored, man.
Well, absolutely. Listen, I feel honored that you guys are on the air. I think this is great. This is growing into a wonderful thing, and I wish all you guys all the luck in the world, man.
Well,
I'll be
thanks, Wayne.
With a little luck and a little scratch, we'll get there.
Okay. Have a good one.
All right, man.
Right on,
too.
Wayne. Thanks. we've had plenty of luck. We need some of the scratch. That would be good at the moment.
Itchy. Okay, that was Wayne from West Virginia. Thanks, Wayne, for calling in. I just wanted to also mention, you know, the fact that I know we're heading into a break here shortly, but I wanted to really sort of pump the idea, you know, that we have to, not only do we need to take back the House, but we also need to create a national strategy for the Democratic Party that's going to be a strategy of, I don't know, a 10 or 15 or 20-year plan where, you know, there is real strategizing around the idea that the southern states aren't lost or that the heartland isn't lost to the Republican Party. And we need to convince those people out there who are voting based on values that torture is not a value. We need to convince them that kidnapping and calling it rendition is not a value. What we need to convince them of is that honesty and integrity in government is a value that the Democrats uphold and that it is one that we live by on a daily basis.
Well, yeah, and yeah, I don't want to just say that the Democrats, you know. I mean, it should be just as Americans and then get back to actually having some debate. Because, you know, again, why we're doing this and trying to do conversation radio is to actually discuss things. I'm hearing some news there, so go to a Bruce, and we're going to come back and talk about a lot of stuff. You can bring into the show 7-4 head, and you're listening to 4. We'll be right back. See how they run like pigs from a gun, see how they fly. I'm crying.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack.
So give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible. A cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Alright, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Bruce Birch in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hi, mate.
Mate.
I love Little Feet.
So do I. One of the first shows I ever saw live, just, I'll never forget it.
You know, the first ones I ever saw was Allman Brothers Band with B.B. King. And what
really?
An amazing show that was. Let me tell you something. The World's Fair Park Outdoor Concert, World's Fair Park Amphitheater in Knoxville, Tennessee. And it was part of the chili cook-off they do there once a year in July. It was pretty amazing. And I'm sure that our buddy Luke, who I think lives in Knoxville, knows all about this. But I lived in the Fort Sanders area of Knoxville, Tennessee, which is right by UNC which is right by UT, University of Tennessee, Knoxville there. And it was a pretty amazing concert. We actually tore the fence down and everything.
Wow.
Yep. People wanted to get in so bad they ran out of tickets or space, so they just took the fence out and let everybody in for free. It was pretty cool.
I'll tell you, when it comes to Little Feet, and aside from just not too many bands can get away with that many guitar players on stage at once, but the drummer always kills me, and if any of the drummers out there that are listeners will know this, you watch the guy, and you'll be feeling 2 and 4 come down, and most of the time he never's actually playing there. The guy is like the legend of the subliminal groove, just something I've always loved about that band.
Oh, no doubt.
So we've been talking about a lot of different things tonight, but I wanted to just, and we only got a couple minutes before we do our news at the top of the hour, and I wanted to run this story by you, John and Bob and whoever else is listening, the other five people, people on the live stream, and that is that Vermont Democrats are apparently calling for Bush impeachment. Democratic Party leaders in Vermont on Saturday passed a motion asking Congress to immediately begin impeachment proceedings against President Bush. In an elementary school cafeteria strewn with American flags and copies of the U.S. Constitution, some 100 state party officials agreed to make the request to the U.S. House of Representatives. The measure asks the Republican-controlled House to pass articles of impeachment against Bush for misleading the nation on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction and engaging in illegal wiretapping, among other charges. Now, Democratic state committees in Wisconsin, New Mexico, Nevada, and guess where else? North Carolina have taken similar steps. So I just wanted to let you know that, you know what, there is a grassroots involvement out there that seems to be moving along and trying to, you know, push the idea forward that this president needs to be taken to account for his actions.
Well, I think we're seeing maybe utilizing that idea that Reagan did with the kitchen cabinets, you know, that the real change is going to come from, you know, school board meetings leading to things like this, where communities are, you know, making official in the record that, you know, they feel that this is all wrong. And since, obviously, the Democrats as a whole aren't listening, and like you talked about, you know, setting up a long-term platform, I think that's a great idea, you know. And I think the right wing sometimes does have us nailed, that we are constantly screaming at them that we are never really laying out our own platform. We know what the platform is as progressives and as Democrats. We know in our hearts what it is, but we're not doing a real good job of getting it out there, which I think is why this network is popping up, because we're not able to get that out. And I hope that maybe as we get to 2008, we'll start actually looking at candidates for their ability as opposed to their electability. And then that very thing, coming up with a platform to then connect to a very, very good candidate, as opposed to someone that you think wins on the cult of personality level, to use Joe's term from tonight.
Sure.
You know, you've seen me get into things in chat rooms with people from time to time when, you know, talking about these kind of issues, and I hate that they write off perfectly good Democrats because they think on the surface they're not electable, and I think that's short-sighted. Why don't you take us out to the news, Mike?
All right, buddy. This is Bruce Birch, and that's John Fox. If you want to get on the program, please do call us, 1-877-443-2366. This is Head On Radio Network. It's about midnight. We'll be right back.
See you tomorrow.
On Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid. George Bush used his weekly radio address Saturday to attack Democrats under the guise of discussing immigration. Bush claimed that the lack of progress on the so-called immigration debate in the Senate is the fault of Democrats.
This compromise is being blocked by the Senate Democratic leader, who has refused to allow senators to move forward and vote on amendments to this bill. I call on the Senate Minority Leader to end his blocking tactics and allow the Senate to do its work and pass a fair, effective immigration reform bill.
Bush neglected to mention that the amendments in question were tendered by hardline Republicans opposed to his own guest worker policy. The Bush administration is well on the way to war with Iran. Seymour Hersh reports in the April 17th issue of the New Yorker magazine that the White House has laid plans for a huge bombing campaign against Iran. The plans include the use of nuclear bunker buster bombs. The White House campaign includes characterizing Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad as a modern-day Hitler, just like they did with Saddam Hussein. The coal that powers America's energy addiction is soaked in a little more blood. Two more West Virginia coal miners were killed Friday in separate accidents. In one instance, a man was ground to death in the teeth of a continuous mining machine. In the other death, that came when the roof of a section of mine collapsed on the victim. The two deaths bring to 18 the number of workers killed this year, supporting America's boundless lust for cheap electricity. Another U.S. Marine has died from wounds received in action in Iraq's Al Anbar province. The Pentagon said Saturday that the Marine was a member of Regimental Company Combat Team 5 and died Saturday from injuries he sustained on Friday. The only other information forthcoming from the Pentagon was that the individual died, quote, as a result of enemy action. The Defense Department neglected to indicate who the enemy was. The death toll from Friday's mosque bombing in Baghdad has risen to 81. 180 people are now listed as having been wounded in the attack. The attack brought a new tactic into the fray. Two of the bombers were dressed as women in the long black abayas that Shia women have to wear in order to avoid punishment by fundamentalist men. Unrest continued Sunday in Nepal's capital. Nepalese police forces fired into a crowd of protesters. They killed one person and wounded five others. Nepalese people are dissatisfied with the government of their king. He ended the Nepalese experiment in democracy last year. The protests are marking the anniversary of the anti-democratic crackdown. A curfew and shoot-on-sight order remains in effect in the capital, Kathmandu. This is News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Lawyers in George Bush's secret military trials in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, say that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has, quote, messed this thing up, unquote. Rumsfeld's rules for the secret trial say that accused prisoners in the concentration camp cannot represent themselves at trial. Military prosecutors say that violates rules of criminal procedure. The Bush administration is considering releasing a convicted terrorist. Luis Posada Carriles was convicted of bombing a jetliner in 1976. He's in the United States illegally and is being detained pending deportation proceedings. His lawyers filed papers Friday asking a federal judge to allow him to go and live with his family in Miami. Rupert Murdoch's right-wing New York Post is under investigation. The paper announced Friday that the FBI is looking into allegations that a columnist for the paper demanded money to keep stories about a billionaire out of print. Jared Paul Stern, a gossip columnist for the conservative paper, is alleged to have demanded $100,000 from billionaire Ron Burkle. The tycoon had been the subject of gossip items about his sex life. Stern was allegedly caught demanding the money from Burkle on videotape. The Bush administration official charged with trying to seduce a little girl has made a full confession. Polk County, Florida Sheriff Grady Judd says Brian Doyle admitted he tried to seduce a person online whom he thought was a 14-year-old girl who was recovering from leukemia. Sheriff Judd also said that he had received an anonymous tip that Bush's Homeland Security Deputy Press Secretary had been disciplined previously for viewing online porn back when he worked for Time magazine. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Political trials. And when you go into jail, you see that. Because you see that 90% of the people in jail are black. That's
right, everybody. Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio for the Mad Hour 3. Hey, Bruce Birch, you there?
Si, senor.
I heard the music kicking in there, and I went, oh, yeah, Hour 3 already? You're kidding.
You're kidding me, because this is, you know what, let's go ahead and do 5 hours tonight. What do you think? Bob, are you up for 5 hours? Bob is probably vigorously, like, his eyeballs are popping out of his head right now. Five hours.
I'm waiting to see all the swear words come down the production chat.
He says no, not five. Let's do six. Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, you know, no, I don't think we're gonna do this. Well, we might do. I don't know. Let's see. You know, do we want to do a marathon? You know, I just, before we get too far again in back into the program, I wanted to bring to everyone's attention that is about at some point here in the very near future, there's going to be some very heavy duty announcements to come down the pike regarding Head On Radio and regarding content on this network. And so stay tuned for that, folks, because when that announcement comes, we're going to see some major changes on this network, and I would say changes for the better. Wouldn't you, John?
Well, all I can say is the growth may become exponential.
That's all we're going to say. That's all. John, don't say anything else. Because if we say anything else, we'd be giving away the interesting announcement that will be happening. So at some point... Do please, you know, stay tuned. We'll get you that announcement here sometime in the near future. Just stick around. Stick around. it won't be tonight, but it will be. So just stick around. All right. Wanted to get into a couple of other things tonight, and that is, okay, that just blew me away. I get this. We have this little production chat thing going on with our producer. He says, I'm not going to tell you what he said because he told me not to tell you, but he just told me something that was totally hilarious. Okay. Wanted to get into the situation with Gonzalez because, you know, Il Torturador was there at the House Judiciary Committee this week. Testifying about how, you know, he is George Bush's, King George the Fourth's point man in explaining why the president is actually Il Duce. So what we want to do before we get too far into that, I want to listen to some audio first. And this is, let's listen to clip one there, Bob, if you will. Clip one is Mr. Flake. He's actually a Republican too, but this is Mr. Flake, who is a congressman, asking Gonzalez about domestic wiretapping, and you know is basically.
I want to follow along
asking
with
about
the questioning that Adam Schiff started with regard to the warrantless wiretaps, the NSA program. I just want to understand your answer. I wasn't here when he questioned, but I was briefed by him. You mentioned that. That you would not rule out wiretapping solely domestic calls, domestic to domestic calls, under the inherent authority that the president received under the war resolution that we passed here. Is that correct?
I can't rule it out.
Can we be confident that there are no ongoing programs or no programs that have been started and stopped that have used solely domestic to domestic conducted surveillance on domestic-to-domestic communications?
Congressman, I can't comment on anything beyond what the president has said, although I will say that in terms of what the activities of the program have been and are, have been briefed to certain members of Congress.
Okay. That is an interesting clip because, see, now, one thing to keep in mind about what happened there this week is that while our good friend Spector, Arlen Specter from Pennsylvania, will not swear Mr. Gonzalez in when he is testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee, our hateful friend, Mr. James Sensenbrenner, decided that he needed to swear him in. So let's keep that in mind while we're listening to his answers on these questions. What he was asked
right. It
basically was, are you doing domestic wiretapping? And he says, I wouldn't rule it out. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, they just admitted that they're wiretapping Americans.
It's doublespeak. I mean, the whole thing is an exercise in doublespeak, Bruce. You know, when he's been under, not been under oath, you know, well, you know, I mean, I won't rule it out. What a slimy little answer. I mean, he's like, guy's disgusting, you know? And from what I understand in these hearings, they're also basically trying to backdoor legislate legality on the wiretapping issue, which is all going on at the same time here. Is that not true?
Exactly. And that's the other part of this, too, is that this particular, you know, I think they realize that their goose is cooked this fall, and they're pushing hard to get a lot of these laws in place to try to exonerate themselves from, you know, the laws that they have broken. You know, and I wanted to, you know, make it very clear also that, you know, and we're going to get into some more of this audio here in just a moment. But this, you know, the whole, if you saw any of the video from the other day of this Gonzalez freak character, thug.
Not your favorite guy, is he?
No, he's not my he's not my favorite guy there, John. You're not my favorite guy there, are you? Are you? Okay.
Don't like me very much, do you? No, sir, I don't.
No, sir, actually, you know, you really, anyway, okay. Bob, if you want to go ahead and run clip two, this is Gonzalez talking about the Fourth Amendment.
Even the Fourth Amendment doesn't expect perfection. As long as a mistake is made, it's reasonable,
the Fourth
and
Amendment.
That's permissible.
What he's saying there is that the Fourth Amendment does not expect perfection.
Excuse me?
He's saying that the Fourth Amendment does not... Play it again, Bob, if you would.
Even the Fourth Amendment doesn't expect perfection. As long as a mistake is made, it's reasonable, and that's permissible.
As long as the mistake that is made is reasonable, it's permissible.
This is just such a crock. It's such a crock.
I knew you'd love this
one. I mean, this is like, it's snake oil salesman. I mean, I believe Grandpa Simpson and his love tonic more than this guy. You know, I mean, this is just, it's, like you said, it's setting it up to justify and vilify themselves somehow to make something that is not legal appear legal. These people are just, it's amazing. So, like, if it's only a small mistake, but it can't be a mistake if you're intentionally doing it.
And that's just it, is that if you're going and you are intentionally subverting the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, you know, again, that presupposes the idea that it's a, you know, thank you, Bob, that it's a mistake. Play that clip one more time, Bob. I want to hear that one more time for the world.
Even the Fourth Amendment doesn't expect perfection. As long as a mistake is made, it's reasonable, and that's permissible.
As long as a mistake that is made is reasonable, then that's permissible. Now, let me just mention for the record that Mr. Gonzalez is not a judge. He doesn't make that decision, does he, John?
No, he's not. And this is the bizarre thing. He's going on this justification thing when he's actually supposed to be the guy that should be actively prosecuting such conduct. He is the prosecuting valve. And he's playing intermediary. I mean, this, again, going back to when the president has his own personal attorney as the attorney general for the United States. I mean, one of those terms that the right wing doesn't understand is conflict of interest.
Well, I totally agree. I totally agree. The conflicts of interest, these guys don't have ethics, okay? You know, there is a such thing called legally right and morally wrong. And
yeah.
the Republican Party seems to operate from the paradigm that as long as this won't take them to prison, it's okay. And they sleep very fine at night having made their millions of dollars.
You know, I, for one, totally disagree with that idea, and I would venture to say that most progressives would tend to disagree as well, in that if you are morally wrong in a decision that you're making, or ethically wrong, that is as equal or worse than being legally wrong, because there's two different standards there. I think we talked about that before.
Yeah, and it just made me think of a lyric from Tool, you know, from the very, very first EP. It's only wrong if you get caught.
Which, my friend, brings me to the next clip. And the next clip is Jerry Nadler, who is the congressman from New York. And he's questioning, this is a really great clip, too. I love this because he's hammering Gonzalez about the declassification of information. And I think he's trying to make the tie between what happened with the National Intelligence Estimate in 2003 when with Libby to, you know, what's going on in that whole situation. So, Bob, if you want to go ahead and run clip three.
Can the president on his own declassify anything he wants?
I believe the president would have the authority as commander-in-chief to determine which information.
Yeah. Yes, is your answer. That's please don't waste my time. Yes.
I'm not wasting your time.
You are because I only have 5 minutes, and the answer is yes. You didn't have to say what you said. Are there standards? Does the president have to make a finding that declassifying something is does not injure the national security, or can he do it for political reasons?
The president has the constitutional authority to make the decision as to what is in the national interest of the country.
For whatever reason he feels like.
He has the authority under the Constitution to make that determination.
Okay.
My judgment.
Okay, so he could do it for political reasons, and that would be, and no one can second guess that if he wanted to.
This president could make the decision to declassify information based upon national security reasons.
He could do it for political reasons if he wanted to, and no one could second guess that because he's the commander-in-chief, right?
The president's going to make the determination as to what's in the best interest of the country.
Yeah, he might, but he could. I'm asking you a theoretical question about the authority of the president, not necessarily this president. A president could declassify something for political reasons, and no one has the authority to second-guess him because he's the commander-in-chief. That's what you're saying?
The president does have the inherent authority
okay,
to make
thank
the determination.
And essentially what is happening there is that Nadler is trying to get at the idea that the president, you know, under the executive order that he issued in March 25th, 2003, Executive Order 13292, does he have the right to be able to declassify information such as the identity of a CIA agent?
Well, this is all part of that unitary executive nonsense, it sounds like to me, Bruce. And Bob, I'm with you. This stuff makes me crazy as well because, you know, they're pulling this stuff out. You know, rewriting amendments to the Constitution saying, well, this one doesn't look for perfection, but however, there's this mythical power over here that we say allows him to declassify anything? I mean, that's just absolutely insane. And I was saying in the production chat before, I kind of wish that there were people in the gallery there to have a bit of a Fast Times at Ridgemont High moment, you know, with everybody, you know, as Gonzalez is spewing these things, just sitting going, whoa, you know.
Yeah, really.
You know, and it would just, because it's absolutely a legal fantasy that this guy lives in. I mean, or constructing. I think the whole thing is, you know, maybe quantum physics applies here. They're creating this false reality around them, you know?
Well, and I just wanted to also read, you know, just for kicks and giggles, I also wanted to read the text of the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And this is the amendment dealing with search and seizure. You know, we were talking about this a few minutes ago, and I just wanted to read this because I think it's important. It says that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Does that not pretty much spell it out, black and white?
I think it absolutely does. And I remember early on when we first started the show, there was, for some reason, I went back and actually read the Constitution and all of its amendments. And when you actually go and you hear all the spin on what it actually calls for, what it actually means, when you go and read the documents, first of all, they're beautifully written. You know,
yes, I
mean,
absolutely.
You know, the use of shall, you know, as Bob's saying, it's a mandatory language. It's saying this is the way it is.
Correct.
There is no, if we're gonna look at the rights of people, these are undeniable. You cannot be denied. They're inalienable rights.
Well, and I also, you're absolutely right. There are and you know what? There's also another amendment that says, you know, that just because these rights are not enumerated does not mean that there are not other rights that are retained by the people. And one of those, I would venture to guess, is to be safe and secure in your work. And if you are an agent of the United States government, and your job is to be a covert agent of the United States government, and you take this job, but you know that you're going to, you know, it's going to put you at grave personal risk to reveal your identity, and you spend several years building an identity to be, you know, in a fake front company to try to figure out information related to weapons of mass destruction, and then a president comes along, doesn't like what your husband is doing, and to get back at your husband, he reveals your identity, which then places hundreds, maybe thousands, who knows, of other agents at risk. You know, I'm stopping because I'm speechless now. Because
and Bruce, I'll fill in that dead airspace for you. And when they leaked this identity, it actually did put agents in danger, not just American agents, but English agents. And not to forget that because of this political move, they actually screwed up an MI5 thing that was going on, where they were 1 or 2 days away from getting the mastermind of the London bombing in the tubes. And they knew that it was about a bombing of the London Underground. And they had to pull all their agents out because they didn't know how far the damage would go. Because the English didn't know what their involvement was with the front company or anything. So, it's pretty safe to assume that people probably died. And, I mean, we can, because the bombing happened in London. Bush is actually almost directly responsible for the fact that that did go through.
Well, I wanted to bring to your attention, too, John, that it seems as if, and I don't want to say it seems as if, I mean, this is a fact that the president did, in fact, issue an executive order which, you know, amended classified national security information and who and what can classify and declassify national security information, including information relating to defense against transnational terrorism. You know, it came out very, very interestingly, suspectly, I should say, right around the very same time period, and I think we mentioned this on this program once before, right around the same time period that the name of Valerie Plame was leaked by Scooter Libby and others to several, you know, members of the press, including Robert Novak, whose story was the one that actually caused the furor to start with,
right.
And then also to Judy Miller, to Matt, I'm trying to think of his name. Anyway, the guy for Time Magazine, it's almost as if they planned, you know, an escape route, and created it before they leaked it or after they leaked it, or perhaps even the same day. But you know, before we get back too far into that, I just wanted to mention also that, you know, Patrick Fitzgerald is now directly implicating Dick Cheney in this, saying that Bush authorized the information to get leaked, but that Cheney was the one who pretty much masterminded the whole thing. So that was in a story that I found today that's going to be in tomorrow's Washington Post front page.
The Washington Post that's under investigation.
Yes,
the same. Man, this world is screwed up, man. But
I do have another clip that I wanted to listen to.
Oh, please.
And this is about Gonzalez, again, another Fourth Amendment clip, that this is Representative Scott, Mr. Scott, who is a Democrat, questioning Gonzalez about probable cause. And I think that, let's see, let's go ahead and roll that clip there, Bob, if we can. That's clip four, I believe it is.
Did I understand you to say that reasonable cause to believe and probable cause were essentially the same thing?
From the way that this program has been operated, yes, that it is a probable cause standard that's being applied with respect to the terrorist surveillance program, consistent with the jurisprudence relating to probable cause in a normal criminal law context.
The question was reasonable cause to believe and probable cause are essentially the same standard.
Well, what I said was that the standard we use is reasonable grounds to believe. That's the standard that is applied by the career professional.
Is there a difference between reasonable cause to believe and probable cause?
From my perspective, it is the same standard.
So what he's saying there is that if we think that you might be somewhat against us, then we have the right. And you know what? What does against us mean? Because, John, I don't know that my phones aren't being tapped. I don't know. But that's not even the standard for probable cause. But we'll talk about the probable cause after this break. I know it's about 28 minutes after the hour, and we may even run that clip after the break. But you're listening to Bruce Birch, and my friend John Fox, who's having a conniption.
They're crazy.
And this is Fourth Estate Radio. Stick around, we'll be right back. It goes away. All of this and more of nothing in my life. No one color play. And the visual I see not see.
Friends, drugs and alcohol were the only friends I had. Then a real friend got me into a treatment center. It wasn't easy. Drug and alcohol addiction is a horrible disease. But I got better. I got my friends back, and I got my life back. Treatment taught me what a true friend really is.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Well, my baby, she don't want me around. Since she's tired of watching me fall down.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth State Radio. We're on the downside of things here, Brucey boy. I just can't believe that we're like 2.5 hours into a 3-hour show for this Saturday night.
I just wanted to bring to your attention, John, that you're the only person that calls me Brucey boy.
Hey, man, that's very Australian, see.
And, you know, and just... I think it's kind of cute, actually.
Well, I've told you what my rock and roll touring nickname was in Australia, right?
No, you never have.
Well, see, in Australia, you know, everything is kind of just throwing an I, E, or a Y onto chopped up versions of things. So a carpenter is a chippy here,
okay.
Right? So hence, so John Fox automatically becomes Foxy.
Okay.
And I have to say that it took me a little off guard at first, but, you, were like, you know,
You didn't turn around and tell the first guy, hey, you're kind of cute, too?
Well, the first time I actually heard it, I heard it from a really, really, really pretty jazz singer who's a Canadian who's made Australia her home, who one of the first people who ever said it to me, and I was kind of taken back, and I just went, ah, I'll cope. but, so, yeah, like, Bob would probably be Robbo. If his full name was Robert, let's see, you know, geez, a friend of mine, Michael, a guy by the name of Michael Chapman, he's known as Chappie.
Chappie? All right. Okay. We do have, John, we do have a caller on line one. Our good friend, CB from Northern California. How are you doing, hon, tonight?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Well, no, I'm not. I was until just a couple.
No. They said actually, CB, it was told to me in the chat you were having a conniption fit. Now, be honest.
they know me. I don't even have to go in there, and they know I'm having a conniption. God.
What do you think about this Gonzalez stuff?
That's what I'm sputtering about.
Okay.
He would have flunked out of law school if he'd have brought that up. That last one was just...
You want to hear it again?
Okay.
She's like, I don't know. Yeah, let's go ahead and roll that clip again there, Bob. Let's see. We got a clip coming.
Did I understand you to say that reasonable cause to believe and probable cause were essentially the same thing?
From the way that this program has been operated, yes, that it is a probable cause standard that's being applied with respect to the terrorist surveillance program, consistent with the jurisprudence relating to probable cause in a normal criminal law context.
My question was, reasonable cause to believe and probable cause are essentially the same standard.
Well, what I said was that the standard we use is reasonable grounds to believe. That's the standard that is applied by the career professional.
Is there a difference between reasonable cause to believe and probable cause?
From my perspective, it is the same standard.
What do you think about that, CB?
I think the man should be lynched.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry. that is completely un-American, what he just said.
Based on that, if I have a reasonable grounds to believe, perhaps, that who knows what I mean. You know, you can pretty much trump up anything, can't you?
Exactly. And I mean, all of us have our paranoid moments, and these guys have, you know, that's their way of life.
Well, it's certainly believable. So
they've got reasonable grounds to believe that Iran should be nuked. Is that what they're saying?
Well, you know what? Based on what Seymour Hersh was writing earlier, yes.
Yeah.
It's going to be in the next week's New Yorker.
I know. I subscribe to that. I don't know how to feel about it coming on the internet before the magazine gets here. But I guess this was a good one, an important one.
I think that was leaked. That's not actually. If you go to the online version, it's not there.
Oh, okay.
So that was a leaked story.
Well, it's good that one got out as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So tell me about this. You know, you have experience with the law?
Antique, I guess, now.
Okay.
I've been out of it for, like, I don't know, 15 years. But
okay.
Yes, extensive experience.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, then. The Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, is there anything in there that gives them the right to tap us without a court order?
No. There's no room for wiggling there.
So there absolutely has to be a
warrant. There has to be a court order. And in order to clarify that, they came up with the FISA law. You know, and they made it loose because they did realize that there were some times where emergencies would come up. But you always, always have to get the court to oversee it. And, I mean, that's the whole probable cause thing there. You know, you can't just say, well, I think this, I thought that, he looks suspicious. You know, you have to have some kind of basic reason for it, and you have to have oversight, even if you're the president.
So essentially, this executive, this unitary executive thing that basically says that they can do whatever the hell they want to do whenever they want to do it, does not apply, does not allow them to subvert the Constitution, it does not allow them to subvert the laws of the United States of America, it does not allow them to create new fictionary laws out of thin air. It basically, so everything that they've been telling us is a lie.
Right. This unitary executive thing is newfangled speak for monarchism.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's also very 1984 with this thing about somehow, you know, with Gonzalez trying to go back and backwards justify and legalize what they've done. It's that rewriting history kind of thing, because, you know, you say you haven't been in it for a while, but I don't really believe the Constitution has changed much in 15 years. I think it's pretty much the same.
No. It has not changed. Well, maybe somebody should check. I'm starting to get paranoid about that. Maybe there's been somebody in there fooling with it. They were talking about getting it a new case.
I went and looked it up a few months ago and read through it and read through the amendments, and nothing popped up that didn't seem the same as it was when I was in grade school, the last time I had a civics class.
I wouldn't put it past these guys to go in and get the original document while they're putting it in its new case and fudge a little bit. You know, it's full of little cross outs and stuff anyway, isn't it? So if they go in and cross something out, use some ancient ink, you know, and make it look like oh, we've had it wrong all this time. This was supposed to be a monarchy after all.
That more like Animal Farm and their thing where you know, it started out all animals are equal, and then they added, but some animals are more equal than others.
You sound like Max Headroom, John.
Yeah,
John, you were sounding kind of like Max Headroom. That was kind of cool, though. Okay, I do have a question for you, though, CB.
Okay.
And that is, have you heard this story about the whistleblower that apparently outed, you know, AT&T for going along without a court order and allowing the NSA to wiretap not only telephone conversations but also internet traffic, and installing actually a secret room in their switching center in San Francisco? Did you read about this?
I only just heard that had happened. I don't know about the whistleblower.
Well, this whistleblower, his name is Mark Klein, has actually joined a lawsuit against AT&T with the Electronic Frontier Foundation that is alleging that AT&T violated federal and state laws by surreptitiously allowing the government to monitor phone and internet communications of AT&T customers without warrants. and that they actually went in and built a room right next to the switching equipment and dropped in equipment that basically does data mining and, you know, looks for specific words that are typed or that are spoken.
And, yeah, me and my friends are always doing things like saying heroin and stuff like that on the telephone.
Are you?
Yeah, we do that all the time.
Don't say anthrax.
Oops. Yeah, really, don't say anthrax.
Well, actually, I think it was probably the government that
really
did that. But
well, when Bruce and I used to do this show pre-recorded, we used to talk to the NSA directly.
You know, of course, we didn't record that.
Is that how we figured out it was Agent Fred?
When did we actually get the name for him?
I think that popped up during one of Bob Al-Kincaida, shows. I'm not sure.
Al-Kincaida. Oh, God. But you
we're
guys,
having too much fun.
We really have to do something about this stuff.
Yeah, we do.
We really do. We can't just lay down and take it. And that little clip, I was doing just fine until you played that clip, and I just, my eyeballs popped clean out of my head.
You do have them back, because apparently you were able to see to dial the phone. So.
Exactly. I had to poke them back into my head in order to dial the phone. It was that bad.
Come on, CB. You have it down to memory. You could do it with your eyes closed anyway.
Actually, you know, I call so few people, I can usually just hit the redial button. Isn't that sad?
So, I resemble that remark, I'm sorry. But, you know, you're right. We have, there's a lot of work to be done, because, I mean, these guys are making an absolute mockery.
Joe Vecchio. I can't hang with this take it slowly thing. We have to do it now. It has to happen. It isn't exactly like it's just a plain political fight. You know, this is a fight for the United States of America. This isn't about whether it's Republicans or Democrats. It's about our country, our Constitution, our freedom. You know, the Bill of Rights that has been trampled upon beyond expressing.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a blood curdling emergency, and we just keep getting so many offenses so hard and so fast that we're going brainless behind it, or we're so used to thinking, oh my God, this is un-American that. We forget when something's un-American, we got to do something about it right away. Freedom is not free.
No, it's not. Freedom isn't, you know, and there is a responsibility. And you know what? As I like to say a lot of times, democracy is not a system of government. It's an action.
Right.
Okay? And that's why when I love to go out to some of these protest marches and they say, you know, this is what democracy looks like. You know, the chant, I love that because that's exactly what it looks like. You know, people out there expressing their views freely, well, mostly freely, except for being surrounded by SWAT teams.
Right.
You know, but that's, you know, that's the way that, you know, that things need to be. And in reality, it may take all of us getting out into the streets. I know that you and I have talked about this at length, but it's going to take all of us getting out in the streets and coming to a place of realizing that it's going to be all or nothing. You know, that we're going to have to take, we may have to take it back, you know, dare I say, by any means necessary, of course, legal and peacefully. But
right.
But time will tell.
Right.
So, but CB, thank you so much for calling into the program.
Hey, you're welcome. Now, watch it with those clips. You know, there's only so much I can take.
I understand. And I certainly hope that your eyes are now popped back into your head and things are going to be okay.
Okay. Night, night.
CB, and guess what, CB?
What?
I'm going to be out in your neck of the woods next week.
Hey!
I'm going to be broadcasting next week's program from Nevada City, California.
Oh, well, that's not exactly my neck of the woods, but...
Well, it's a lot closer than Greensboro, North Carolina.
That's true. You're going to be in Nevada City. That's great. You should. Are you going to be at the American Museum?
I'll probably will check it out. Yeah, while I'm there.
And go to McGee's. There's a really cool bar there where at least they used to always play really great music at this bar.
Okay.
I used to go there and drink soda pop after I'd gone on my long evening walk.
Oh, cool!
I'll definitely
check it out, CB. But you know, and tomorrow night, I'll have a very special guest on the program that I'm sure you'll be interested in. So,
okay.
But we'll definitely, I'll I'm going to be out there for about 3 weeks doing the program from California. So,
well, neat.
Well, it's great to talk to you.
Good night, guys.
Good night, CB.
Have a great evening.
Bye.
All right, this is Fourth Estate Radio. My name is Bruce Birch. That's my buddy John Fox, and he's no longer having a conniption. But we're doing good. It's about 47 minutes after the hour. This is Fourth Estate Radio, brought to you by the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle
me. It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Planet Check.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told me that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
All righty, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. What is that, Bob? The Police, right on. Excellent. Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio, everybody. John Fox in Sydney here. Bruce Birch up there in North Carolina. And you have something to make me scream, I believe.
Okay, that's loaded. Actually, I do. I do. And that is, I just wanted, you know, I was just handed this story by my producer, and it made me, oh my gosh. Okay, let me just tell you, this is out of the Birmingham News. That's the first bad part of the news. The second bad part of the news is that the Alabama Federation of Republican Women wants to take away the citizenship of babies born to illegal immigrants in the United States, and the group is using baby dolls to make the point. The members have dressed the dolls with handmade oilcloth bibs, proclaiming 118 billion anchor baby. The figure illustrates an estimate of the annual cost to provide government services such as food, education, and health care to these families, according to the group's research. Any child that is born on American soil is automatically a U.S. citizen under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. To change that, a bill to amend the Constitution would have to pass by a two-thirds majority in the House and the Senate and then be presented to the states for approval. Elois Ziana, and this, you know, this is a really interesting last name because it doesn't look like it's, you know, anyway. Elois Zena of Alabama Federation of American Women, of Republican Women, says, "We did it because it's generally unknown that these anchor babies exist and what the economic impact is. We feel that this should be in the debates about illegal immigration." Zena, a board member from the Tuscaloosa chapter, said the benefits afforded to the families of U.S.-born immigrant babies is an irresistible lure to their families, luring them, prompting many to sneak into the country. She said that members are concerned that caring for these immigrant families comes at a cost to U.S. citizens in the form of health care cuts. Limiting citizenship would eliminate one incentive for pregnant women to come here illegally. I'm thinking, all the pictures that I've seen of people crossing the Rio Grande, haven't seen too many pregnant people crossing the Rio Grande. Have you?
Anchor babies?
Anchor.
Anchor babies.
You know, because they anchor, you know, the mother.
What kind of imagery do you think they're trying to conjure up here? I mean, this is disgusting. And as you said, you don't see pregnant women making that dash across the border to go and work for peanuts because some U.S. greedy jackass doesn't want to pay a real wage to an American. I mean, I think that
you know, this is one of those bills or one of those things that the Republican women there in Alabama, you know, it must have been a slow day at the Bridge Club. I'm thinking that they just decided, they sat down and they went, "We need to really do something about this illegal immigration that's going on across the United States, because it's getting harder and harder every day for our husbands to find work." Yeah, bull.
Yeah.
You know, I don't...
I think this... And this whole immigration debate is a really, really hard one, because I think one of the reasons that they've pulled this whole mess is it will, in some ways, divide up the opposition, because, again, we're not having the conversation that we need to have, where the whole reason that we have this whole thing with illegal immigrants is because of U.S. companies, not because of the migrant workers.
And, you know, and you're absolutely right, John. But, you know,
and
I just
saw that this is job this scare stuff to really, truly concern people to be arguing the wrong argument.
John, I think just for all of our listeners, we need to hear the scream one more time. Go ahead and give it to us.
What, my blood curdling? Ah! These people drive me nuts. Did that break up down the line?
Oh, my God, that was great, man. That was great. Okay, thank you, John. All right, now, we wanted to say, and the bottom line is that, that's just insanity. If this door is open for them to alter this part of the Constitution, guess which one is going to be next? The 20th, probably, which is the one limiting the president to only 8 years in office.
This is the one that I'm really worried about, man. I'm really worried about that one.
But
we've talked about that before.
Yeah, but these guys are dancing all over the amendments. And, you know, they don't like the rule of law. They don't like the Constitution. They don't like freedom American style. You know, they just don't. I mean, you know, I used to say, why do Republicans hate America? Because they're trying to remake America into something that it's not and that it never was. And,
yeah,
you know, and so
they didn't like America, so they decided they had to change it for the worse. And it's a really, again, we continually find ourselves in new and scarier places, you know. Yeah, and Bob actually throws in here how, you know, if they're doing this, what are they going to try and do next, man? You know,
exactly.
What is the next move for still people not yet held accountable? But, you know, we're going to start running up against the end of the show here, man. And maybe we need to look into this whole thing about third terms and 8 years and all that stuff, you know, next week. You know, it's a very, very scary place when you have Gonzalez backwards engineering law.
I totally agree. Now, here's the other thing I wanted to sort of keep in mind or let you know. We need to, if you know, folks, do stay tuned for after our program. We will have a lecture by Seymour Hersh and Scott Ritter, and they'll be talking about how to get out of the war of Iraq, the war on Iraq. And then also, I wanted to give you a heads up about tomorrow night's All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch on this very same radio stream at 10 o'clock following Grace and Rama Homebodies. And that is, I will have Michael Berg, who is the father of Nicholas Berg, who was the American contractor who was beheaded in Iraq during the first part of the war there. And Michael Berg is actually running for Congress in Delaware. And so we're going to have him as a part of the program tomorrow night. And he said he'd be willing to take calls and talk to you. So do tune in for that.
That'll be great, man.
I think it'll be an interesting conversation. He sounds like a very, very intelligent fellow. And you know, any man who has his son murdered and then turns and is and that all that does is solidify his anti-war stance says a lot for his character.
You bet.
So he's not about rage and he's not about retribution. He's about forgiveness and he's about trying to do the right thing. And that's fantastic.
And I find it interesting that he's running as a Green.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So do tune in to All Things Reconsidered. I do want to also I'd like to thank Bob Kincaid and Agnes Kincaid for helping to produce the program. We'd like to thank Ben Birch, White Rose Society, and we'd also like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in this week. John, anybody I'm missing here?
No, man, I think we got it covered. We love you all showing up every week. There were more of you this week, I reckon, and man, big one. Great to have Cup of Joe on board the Horn. That's all I can think of. And you guys rock our home studios in West Virginia. Bob and Agnes, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes.
You had your hands full today.
And as always, 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 Head On Radio Network is brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and we're trying to build a foundation right here on Head On Radio. So, everyone, we'd love to thank you for tuning in tonight and for having a great go with us. And